Our speaker today is Sharon Weaver. Sharon Weaver earned a master's degree in divinity at Vanderbilt University, and she has held work positions as a teacher, nonprofit worker, and college professor. Sharon currently operates a consulting company called Spiritual Care Providers. The title of her sermon is Remembrances, Why We Retell Our Stories. Let us welcome Sharon.
Beautiful flowers. Oh, those are so pretty. Do they come from? Yeah. Joe and Bertie, thank you. It's good to be here. Thank you for having me again. Sorry, it's been a while. This is a discussion, hopefully, later on, that I was going to give, I guess, 2 months ago when I got a little waylaid by life and haven't been here. So it's very applicable to what's been happening in our world lately. But we won't worry about directly pointing because it's really applicable just in life. And I want to make a sort of a plea that we embrace narratives and stories a little bit more, with a little bit more dignity and respect. Okay, and that's why I bring this up. Okay, that's why we're talking about it. One of the reasons we talk about it. Storytelling is often dismissed as something for children. I enjoyed that story we just had, though, didn't you? I learned some things. I wouldn't want to be tested on it because I can't verbally say it, but I could probably pick out the pictures. Thank you, Monica. I love that. You know, and my song of the heat being over at the end of the day, the collective jungle noises, mine would be going, whew. You just hear this whew from everybody, and oh, it's hot, and we're glad it's cooling. So I love storytelling. I come from oral tradition, and I'm a verbal processor, so I talk a lot. But anyway, oral tradition, storytelling is often dismissed as something for children. It's sort of seen as intellectually less than. It's certainly not described as sophisticated. We think of storytelling. Jonesboro, did you know that? The oldest town in Tennessee has an annual storytelling, and we think how quaint, and that's very folkish, and it's very entertaining if you ever get to go. It's often referred to through this lexiconical lens of ancient, our native, our indigenous people's stories, indigenous people's understanding of what happened, natives coming up with an attempt to understand. And so when we say that, when we look at it that way, we tend to dismiss it. It's sort of dismissive, and it lends itself as sort of a suggestion that it's not really factual, that it's somehow inaccurate, or not as filled with the knowledge that we would know today, certainly. So the reason kind of underlying why we would even talk about the value of storytelling, our narratives, or oral tradition, is I want you to sort of expand that credibility and the legitimacy of oral tradition. I want just to make room. I'm elbowing in, if you will. Hey. This historical is a valuable tool that we glimpse into our past, or we make our current, our present for the future. It's one that's not just merely juxtaposed against the written tradition. There's written, oh my goodness, that's so important. And then there's what people say. And it's, again, dismissive. After all, written, our history is really just a retelling. It's just written and was often written and shared by the privileged, the few who knew how to write or read or created it. But that is not when history started. And that's not as when we, as individuals, as collective, as tribes, as groups, that's not when we started. It was long before that. And so I'm not dismissing, but trying to raise up both. So we look at this, it's been sort of looked at as if the methods were competitive, as you must choose between which is more valuable. Are you sort of artsy and you like the creativeness of storytelling and, oh, that's important, and here's the children? Or we're going to study, have a Bible study, have a study of something, read this book and share this thing and research this article and whatever, and it will all be written, you know. And when I've done papers in the past, you know, I've always tried to include an interview or some sort of oral understanding, sometimes artwork, because you want to tell the whole story, don't you? I mean, the book that Monica shared with us had pictures, which is wonderful. And yes, you could have described it. You could have described it in detail so that we might have been able to even draw. But it's nice to have a photo. And there's nothing wrong with incorporating that into the telling or retelling. So rather than methods being competitive or forcing a choice between them, I want us to think about incorporating each into the other. Okay, we're making a stew of what is true, of what is real, of what is factual. Always with a question mark. Or a good cook would say a pinch of salt, right? And that's how we tell people, take everything that that person says with a pinch of salt. Meaning, it might be seasoned a little, might be. And, or at least at the best, I want you to view them as complementary, as they complement each other, oral tradition, written tradition. But probably the most important and applicable for today's discussion is I want us to discuss retelling our stories for the purpose of better understanding ourselves and others. For that's really what we do. We understand. We try to understand ourselves better and others better by retelling our stories, by telling again things that happened to us, things we saw, things we heard other people say, what our experiences have been, sort of our histories, and we retell them in different ways, and we retell them to each other. There's great power in that. That's great power in that. Joe shared with us that he went somewhere and shared stories and remembrances and information with a group of people with whom he had a life-changing experience with, a redefining experience. So Joe is not just man. Joe is not just Caucasian. Joe is not just Southern or whatever. Joe is soldier, was in his history and now previous. So what do you do with that? Especially when you struggle with, what is that? You know, that's a title someone else maybe forced upon me or gave me or I claimed proudly, as we all have in our histories. Some of those titles that others would give us or we might don ourselves are some we don't want. Some we might be even associated with shame or guilt because of a past transgression against others or ourselves. Some of it we're very proud of. Some of it we claim we're very proud of, and then others look upon us in ways to shame or to guilt. And then what do we do with our story? Salman Rushdie, as most of us know, as the writer of the Satanic Verses, that was his fourth book, and he's written some since then, but that's certainly one that got him in the most trouble, let's say. His notoriety gained legend as the fatwa was placed upon his head and placed upon him, and so, you know, he had to go into hiding. And so I think the man knows something. I pay attention to people's words that have that sort of experience, especially when they're talking about writing and story. because he's an author and a writer. So those, he says, those who do not have the power over the story that dominates their lives, the power to retell it, and this is important, retell it, to deconstruct it, which is a lot of times what we're doing, to joke about it, and change it as times change, truly are powerless because they cannot think new thoughts. I want to repeat that again. It's very, very useful. Those who do not have the power over the story that dominates their lives, the power to retell it, to deconstruct it, to joke about it and change it as many as times change, truly are powerless because they cannot think new thoughts. We are in the process of creating our stories. And I want you to think about that and linger on that today. We're creating our stories. We're creating our stories as UUFM. People who come to this community. And probably each of us have a different take on it. Why we came, when we're trying to share with new people, we have members of UUFM stand up and tell their story of sometimes how they got involved and why they came. And most importantly, why they stayed and why this is their tribe in a lot of ways. We do have stories of families. Dysfunctional ones, which is really, if you break it on down and deconstruct, families, period. I think that's a definition. A dysfunctional group of people born into each other's lives that are trying to figure out what the heck we're trying to do and what do you do with Uncle So-and-so, you know, our brother, whoever's who acted. So that's a given. I think we just better say that. But we look at the stories that we create in families about that, the stories that are handed down through the lens of whatever's happening and what's valued then. We look at the stories of our region. What does it mean to be a Tennessean? Well, you can look at history books. We got a flag and I don't know, we're volunteers and I don't really know after that. We don't have any state taxes. I mean, income tax, I shouldn't say state. We have high state taxes, but no income tax. I mean, and but what does it mean to be a Tennessean? You know, but you're identified sort of that way. You claim that. And certainly, what does it mean to be an American? We all have different views of that, but that's a story we share by virtue of here we are. Here we are. So some storylines we're handed. Oh, I pop out, I'm a girl. Supposedly, that's what they are telling me, and that's how I'm to define myself. And so even if you have a sneaky suspicion that it's not that simple, and that you might be not a girl, you might be more than, you might be lots of things other than, and what in the world does it mean to say someone is a female versus a male versus a whatever? Yeah. But we're handed that sort of package, and you're this. And so a lot of our basis for our stories are given to us, and we didn't ask for. And we enter into this world, and here we are, and we enter into where we were born, or where our parents have moved to, if we have parents, and if we don't, why don't we, et cetera, et cetera. All the societal junk that comes along with that, that somehow we really get handed, besides diapers, we get handed a little storybook that says, this is your past, even though you just got here. And dependent upon what your religion is, there's a whole big, you know, history with that. Welcome, little one, you sinner, you. I just got here. How did you know what I was thinking about the physician when he smacked me? Or she smacked me? How did you know I was going, it's tight in here. Let me out. I don't like you anymore. I want out my own. How did you know that? Because that must be sin. Because what else have I done other than show up? Right? But you get heavy laden with all this stuff. And so there you go. Think you don't have a story? Oh, no, no, no. No, no, no. You've got stories to tell. And if you don't claim them, someone else will. Now, telling your story or telling a story or telling your story in opposition to whatever can get you into trouble. Ask Rushdie. Ask lots of people. But you were asking, I think, Jenny, is it Jenny, for courage, you know, and that's what it takes. And you have it just to stand up and share. You know, we have courage by still virtue of being here. And then certainly in this group. And when you start claiming and saying, you know, I think I'm the author of my story. That's different from saying I'm in control totally of my life and I'm in charge and all that kind of stuff we like to tell ourselves. But I'm the author. I'm the narrative or narrator of my story. And even then, you've got to use a little grain of salt, right? Even then, it will be seasoned by others. But if you don't at least attempt by telling, retelling, deconstructing, examining, understanding differently, sharing, laughing at, weeping with, that wasn't in there, or weeping about, grieving over, and then claiming and reclaiming your story, then you're going to end up with a very monotonous story that's just retold over and over and over from the point of either victim sometimes or the point of, well, there's nothing to tell, or the point of the aggressor, the point of the, you know, the person doing harm. So retelling and telling our stories, sharing our narratives that were mindfully understood helps us understand ourselves better, gives us an avenue to recreate ourselves, to become and to claim what we already were, courageous, concerned, compassionate, creative, loving, sensitive, respectful. But from a lens that is perhaps a little more kind, a little more invitational for others to become involved with us. And let me give you an example. Let's talk about the Confederate flag. I love it. I love it. I see eyes roll because it's like I happen to know the last two speakers talked about the Confederate flag. And I said I just would do that as a joke. But then I sort of want to... And I'm not poking fun at what they said. It's important. And it's current. That's what I said. It was current, you know. But I'm a Southerner. And I don't wave any Confederate flag. You know, never have. I don't wave any flag. But I grew up with some boys, probably girls too, and I say that sort of in that purpose, that do. But how they understand it is not how it's understood. And they keep trying to reinvent it, or invent it, or push against others reinventing it, and others, you know, having that revisionist history. This gets into a very gray area in storytelling, right? So if you, and I say this because that's a hard story to listen to. I was somewhere where I saw a young man walk up and he had his t-shirt on and it had a Confederate flag on it and says, if my t-shirt bothers you, you don't know history. And I just chuckled. Oh, my Lord. I wanted to say, well, I might not know your history. I don't know your history. Now, I dismiss and I go ignorance and I do all sorts of things that's dismissive because I'm not about to start to have a conversation with him because I learned it was in the middle of a place where you wouldn't have a conversation with someone necessarily and it would be seen as antagonistic. It wasn't a time to talk, and there's always a time to talk. But I don't have to talk to him to know some of that, what's behind that. And it's not about the flag. It's not about slavery or whatever. It's about a culture that has seen itself as under attack. And there's lots of cultures and lots of groups that have. And has enough independence to say, don't you tell me what to value. Don't you tell me what my history is. You're not from here. And actually, I am, but that wouldn't matter. I'm not saying that's good, but I'm saying that's a person's view. That is their view. How do you change views? What did we just say? Deconstruct, reconstruct stories through understanding. How do you engage in conversation? If you want control over your story, how do we help others understand this so they're not repeating the same monotonous, same stories over and over without mindful thinking, without examination of why are you saying that? Why can you not see that the symbol that may have at one time to your family meant independence and, you know, away from tyranny, a way out, rail against tyranny? How can you not, in your view, how can you not see that that symbol also represents the degradation, humiliation, and enslavement of people? Justified in an organized fashion. Could you sit and hear that? Could you sit and hear someone's narrative? Could you help them reconstruct their narrative? Is that narrative different from someone who says, no, it's about, I hate Jews and black people and these people and women should be at work and all this sort of hate-filled stuff? Can you see there may be a difference there? Or have we lumped them all together? Or is there a difference? Okay, that's just one little thing. That's one little headline in the news. What about these other folks? What about the murders? What about the frustrations? What about the ISIS? What about the people who are so vitriolic in their stories and in their violent, in their continued monotony of what they think something means? How can we think about this in a way of retelling, give people a way to retell a story so they understand there is a need to deconstruct, to examine, and in some ways give people an out, a way of changing? Do we allow for change? Or do we become part of the problem by dismissing and not listening? It's hard to listen. It's hard to listen to some other stories. It's hard to listen sometimes when people have been harmed and they stay in the harm and they stay in the pain and you hear it over and over and over. It's hard. You don't want to dismiss. I have a friend who calls me, and she called the other night, or texted, I should say. And we're chit-chatting. How are you? Fine. How are you? Fine. Fine. And I knew something was not fine. So I did. I said, well, how's it going with the health stuff? And she said, I am so very broken. And that is her narrative for herself. I'm broken. I'm broken. I'm broken. and in many ways she is. She has a very complicated past. But when they talk about, when our researchers talk about the monotony of stories and our narrative, they're referring to not the boring, that it's boring, but it's continuous and changing. The definition of sort of monotony. Continuous, never changing, same flat way. Yes, and the things listed that she has had happen and the things that she's been given, we also certainly receive genetic stuff. Like, oh, let's open up this little package we got at birth. Oh, your genetic stuff that's going to harm you later. Oh, shoot. You know, nobody ever gives you that list of baby gifts, right? And you get this and this and this. But you open up that, and you look at it, and you incorporate that in, and you can easily be overcome with it. And you need to tell it. But one of the harms, you know, they'll talk about in therapy is if you go in and you just retell the pain, the horrors of something over and over and over and over and over, so that you're just reinforcing that, guess what, this was awful, this happened, this awful, awful happened. Yes, here we pick back up, this was awful, this happened. The power of healing, the power of change comes in retelling, claiming that narrative, claiming those gifts. Yep, come on. I'm Southern, whatever that means, you know. I'm a white woman, whatever that means. I've got this genetic stuff, whatever that means. All of those. Claim them and then remake your story. And then retell it. It's cognitive therapy. Cognitive behavioral therapy, attach it to behaviors, and you go about creating change. And that's what's been done, my goodness. If you don't think it works, look at the political candidates running for president and examine their historical autobiographies, historical, hysterical, whichever you want to apply. And they've gotten creative and reconstructed, deconstructed, reconstructed, whatever. And that's an extreme you might not want to go to. But I will tell you this, if you don't claim your story, someone will, and someone will anyway. Someone will anyway. You know why? Because you're going to pass. And you live longer than your body here on this earth. You all are parents. Parents. How many of you are parents? Oh, special blessings. Think about it. You're someone's dad. Mom, pop, maybe grandmother, grandfather sometime. I'm an aunt, maybe an aunt or uncle. And long after I'm gone, my niece and nephew will tell stories about Aunt Sharon. They'll talk about dad and then later grandpa. And with the genealogy and Facebook and selfies and all this kind of stuff, there'll be a history of who we are that lasts. So it's important that we create what it is we want and let go that some of it will be shared in ways that we're like, I really didn't do that. I'm coming to the end of my time, and I'm at the end of the time, but I want to spread all this out. We'll cover it back in when we talk about second hour. But I want you to think about claiming your narrative. It's how we understand each other, how we also can, by telling, retelling, give others permission and can help others do that. A lot of times just by listening wherever they are in the process. Also to think about oral tradition as it handed down and changed. Sometimes it takes someone looking back to understand better than what we, when we're involved in it and undergoing it at the time, than what we can see. So that comes into the soup, in the mix of what really happened. So don't dismiss, you know, let's not dismiss these oral traditions, dismiss these stories we tell each other. When it's communal, we correct each other sometimes, don't we? Have you ever sit at the kitchen table or something and started talking and somebody said, oh, you remember when Dad did? And you're like, no, that was Mom. Oh, no, that was Uncle Joe did it. And so you create it and you strengthen it and it moves along. Thank you for letting me be a part of this history of this story today and for sharing your stories with me individually when you do. And hopefully when we're together, we'll do some more story sharing and talk a little further about it at second hour. Thank you so much, always.